welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Friday, the 24th of February, 2012. Hope you're having and have had a fantastic week. Certainly no shortage of things to do with big-time soccer, the rodeo, golf. I mean, you name it, we've got it. We've got great weather. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Thank you for choosing the Buckmaster Show. We are live Monday through Friday at noon on The Voice, KVOI, AM 1030, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and The Voice Network partners in Douglas. Folks listening to us on AM 930 KAPR and in Gila County and Globe, it's KJAA AM 1240. We live stream the show at buckmastershow.com and at kvoi.com. And if you missed a particular show, we have three places where you can hear this program anytime, anywhere: buckmastershow.com, tucsoncitizen.com, and tucsonsentinel.com. Normally on Fridays, we get things going with our Friday Focus interview. Today it will be featuring U.S. Senator John Kyle. Due to Senator Kyle's schedule, we've changed things around a bit, so Senator Kyle will be joining us at the bottom of the hour, and normally we do the reporters' roundtable at the bottom of the hour, so we'll start the show today with the reporters' roundtable. Joining me on the roundtable, Mark Evans is here. He is the administrator for TucsonCitizen.com, and Dan Scheer is the editor of the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. Friday Focus and the Friday Roundtable on the Buckmaster Show, presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley. Splendido, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. Dan and Mark, good to see you both.
What do you say, Bill?
Well, we're going to begin today with, well, there's several top stories, in my opinion, Mark Evans, and I think that the one that's percolating right now in the Tucson and Southern Arizona community is the fact that the Postal Service says we are closing the Tucson Processing Center. That means at least one more day for your mail deliveries.
Right. The Postal Service last year announced that it needed to reform its business and cut about $3 billion in annual operation. And one of the ways it wanted to do that was to have the number of postal processing centers that they have. They've got about 500 nationwide, and they want to reduce that to about 240 or so. And one of those on the list was the Cherry Bell plant over in central Tucson. And so all the mail that would normally get processed through Cherry Bell will now go to Phoenix. So if you live in Tucson and you want to send a letter or a card to somebody in Tucson, it now has to truck up to Phoenix and come back. And so instead of someone – if you mailed it on Monday, instead of someone getting it on Tuesday, they're going to get it on Wednesday. And for some reason, that has all the local politicos – that and the layoffs, the job layoffs, or the people that would lose their jobs at Cherry Bell. But it has the local political leadership and others just up in arms, rending their garments about, you know, the horror of this. And to
I think it's really stupid, actually, for a city this size not to have a processing center.
But the point
let me add one more thing, Mark, that it's not just about people mailing a card. I'm a small businessman now, and there are like checks and there are bills that go out, and all that stuff's going to be take longer.
But the point the Postal Service is making is that it needs to go to these regional processing centers so that it become more efficient, so that it can keep its costs down. Because right now it's got way too much infrastructure and way too many employees for the volume of mail. And if it doesn't reduce that and has to maintain all these jobs and all these processing centers, it's going to have to raise postal rates. So yeah, you might have a delay in your business in mailing out a letter. But you could also have to pay a lot more to mail it. So I think in terms of the bottom line, I think you might be more inclined to take the extra day than the extra dollar.
What about it, Dan Scheer? Folks in Green Valley are talking about this too.
Yeah, it hits us a little harder down there because a lot of people there are really dependent on the mail. That's still the way they do things for the most part. There's a lot of discussion there. In the end, I think that we expect that another day of delivery, will be cut. We expect rates to go up. I think what we're seeing here in Tucson does make sense. I know it's going to hurt, but it does make sense. But I think it's only the beginning of the cuts.
And the Congress is trying to get involved now, too, because the Postal Service had to get authorization from the Congress to drop mail delivery from 6 days to five. And that bill's mere existence has now proposed all kinds of counter bills and the like, with various people with various interests trying to change and alter the USPS plan. So it's not a done deal. It would go into effect in May unless the Congress gets into the middle of this and meddles it. And, you know, local leaders are lobbying the Congress, Raul Grijalva and the like, to get them to prevent the Postal Service from closing it. So my guess is it's going to close, but you never know.
Coming up now on 1210 on the Buckmaster Show, and we did not give the Buckmaster Show live line number at the beginning of the program, and so here it is, 790-2040, 790-2040. You are welcome to join in at any time. Dan Scheer, whenever we have you in studio, it's always good to get kind of a Rosemont update.
Well,
stop the presses.
Right.
Here's Dan Scheer with Rosemont Update.
Yeah, there have been a few things going on. The EPA is asking the Forest Service to go back, take another look at the draft environmental impact statement. That's the document that we've had several public meetings on, has drawn hundreds of people, lots of comments. And in short, they want the Forest Service to take a closer look at a few areas such as water quality, transportation impacts, et cetera. So probably what's going to end up happening is that the Forest Service will issue a supplement to the draft. They say they were not surprised by the EPA's action here. Opponents of the mind are glad to hear this, but I think that they're probably putting more stock in this than they should. Rosemont has said correctly that they expect a heavy scrutiny, and this is all part of the process. So right now, we are waiting on the Forest Service to release the final EIS and get a decision, but we don't have a date.
Yeah, I defer to Dan on this. He knows a lot more about it than I do. But, you know, the one thing that I would wish is that there was some way to get some giddy up and to get along in this process, because it is just dragging forever.
Well, and Rosemont would certainly agree with you. They thought it would take 3 years, and it's taken a whole lot more than that. Yeah.
And before we go to Wayne is on the Buckmaster Show live line, wants to get back to the post office, want to ask Dan a follow-up question about a lot of folks that are opposed to Rosemont are pointing to the Army Corps of Engineers, and I don't know the number. What is it called, the permit?
It's 404 something,
yeah. But it's pretty important, right?
Right, it is. And again, this is in the last 2 or 3 weeks, we've seen a lot of good news for the opponents of the mine. In the end, will it really matter? That's a good question. I'm still, because you have forced me, unfortunately, to say this on the air, that I do believe that the mine is going to go through. The question of whether it should is something I'm not going to touch. But this is not any more popular today than it was, 6 months or a year ago.
1212 on the Buckmaster Show. Folks do want to talk about the Postal Service. And we are going to – got a couple of calls that want to talk about Postal Service. Wayne is up first. Wayne, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just amazed at the cavalier attitude that some people have about the post office. It's one of the few things that the government or a quasi-governmental agency actually does well. It's a service that's unparalleled in the world. And lots of people, not just people in Tucson, but people in Santa Cruz County and Cochise County and the outlying areas of Pima County depend on a good mail service. Now, they're talking about a day or two delay, but when you combine all of this pulling in of the sorting stations all over the country, it's going to really, really cripple the delivery service, and it's going to drive people away. It's something that's constitutionally mandated, and it is something the government should do, and yet, you know, it wants to do a lot of other stuff. And this is a terrible, terrible thing that they're doing. I'd be willing to pay more for postage. And certainly Saturday delivery could go too, but businesses depend on a good mail service nationwide.
I agree with you, Wayne. Being a small businessman, I think this is a big deal, and I say bravo to you. And Mark doesn't agree with me necessarily.
No, I mean the digital age is having a profound effect on a number of industries. I can speak from experience because I used to work in a newsroom of 70 people, and I work in a newsroom of 3. But you know, a lot of people don't use the mail anymore. They use email to send personal communications. They use social media. They're banking online. They're doing their billing online, and that is a reduced volume. And you know, it doesn't make sense for the Postal Service to keep, you know, this huge infrastructure for delivering, you know, tens of billions of pieces of mail when it's not delivering that much mail anymore. It has to shrink. So I understand that people can be passionate about it, but it's a business decision that I think is smart. Yeah, it would be great if they could close Phoenix instead of Tucson, but you know, they got to close one of them, I think. And I don't think it's really going to matter to people that – or they'll even notice that the Cherry Bell closed.
Okay, let's
other go, than people get laid off.
Okay, let's go to Bill now on the Buckmaster Show live line. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, I just want to offer my suggestion or ideas or maybe opinion. If you haven't gone to a post office and got the kind of service that you really wanted, fast, friendly, cooperative, the post office down here at Silver Bell is the most dysfunctional group of people that I've ever seen in my life. And if you're a small businessman, Mr. Host,
yes,
you'll see that
Mr. Buck, make, Mr. Buckmaster, yeah.
Yes, you have to make some decisions relative to economic stability and health. The post office is reducing the services, charging more rates, and offering less service because they feel, the opinion of the postal workers, they feel that the union is going to protect them in all these cases. And I would just say that if you're a small business person, you must make some decisions relative to being strong and stable.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
I think Bill's got some great points there. And again, as Mark said, we are it's almost like a parallel world here because newspapers have been going through this exact thing. We've been losing things to the electronic media. But the first question we asked is, okay, how can we make ourselves more valuable to the readers? And he's right. Then the Postal Service needs to do that too. Then they need to be innovative and they need to be fighting just as hard as we are for relevance and to make sure people understand that what we do is important.
You know, the one thing, the one plan that the Postal Service wants to do that I have trepidation about is the number of rural post offices that's going to close. I know that those post offices can be expensive to operate and there's very little traffic there, but if you consolidate the rural post offices, you can end up making people having to drive, you know, 50, 60 miles one way every day perhaps to get their mail. And those rural areas often don't have the access to the digital age as the people in the urban centers. So that I can see where there's be some legitimate complaint if you live out in the hinterlands about being able to get your mail.
Okay, coming up on 12:17, this would be a good time to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Sheriff Babu. And coming up at the bottom of the hour, we are scheduled to have U.S. Senator John Kyle with us. If you have a question for Senator Kyle, 790-2040. That's coming up next on Buckmaster. Two of the world's largest pharmaceutical giants, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, know where bio works. It works at Innovation Park in Oro Valley, one of the 10 best towns for families, according to Family Circle magazine. Bioscience and bioindustry working together at Innovation Park with 275 acres of inspiring environment ready for biodevelopment. Learn more about where bio works at innovationparkaz.com. Noble Hops Gastro Pub is for people who revere their beer and their food. Noble Hops specializes in high-quality, delicious food and offers an impressive, ever-changing selection of handcrafted beers from around the world with more than 24 on tap. Noble Hops, a pub for foodies at the southeast corner of La Canada and Lambert in Oro Valley, and always on the web at noblehopspub.com and on Facebook.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded in 1930 by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn still sets the standard for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. The Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. The Arizona Inn has again been named one of the best 500 hotels on earth by Travel and Leisure magazine, the only hotel in Tucson to receive this top honor. And the Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson at 2200 East Elm and on the web at arizonainn.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. It is the Friday Reporters Roundtable, a little bit different than we normally do. The Friday Focus is normally the first thing on Friday, then we do the Reporters Roundtable. But Senator John Kyle, because of his schedule, we're doing Senator Kyle at 12:30. Folks still want to talk about the post office, Mark Evans and Dan Scheer, so let's go to John. You're up next on the Buckmaster Show.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, John.
Very good. I didn't know I was on.
You are on.
I have a short comment here.
Okay.
Most of us pay first class 45 cents. There's first class pre-sorted, regular, non-profit, unsolicited mail, lots of heavy mail, contests. I say we get rid of those lower categories, you know, churches and all the charities and this, and that's fine. I contribute to charity. But if we made all the mail 50 cents, and I've had post office people tell me, most of what they carry around is heavy mail that pays very low rates. I say raise the rate to 50 cents per ounce for everybody, and I think that would take care of a lot of the deficit. Plus, Tucson and suburbs, that's 1.5 million people. In all of southern Arizona, that's 2 million people. I can't imagine cutting all that out and sending it to Phoenix, which will cost money, plus Tucson. It'll hurt business, and they'll lose their postage identity. It'll say Phoenix on all letters.
That's right. John, I agree with you. Here's Mark Evans. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, there's all kinds of ways that you can probably change the postal rates and for the Postal Service to bring in money. But one of the big things that's preventing those changes is the incredible lobbying that goes on by U.S. corporations. And the overwhelming majority of the mail that most people get is coming from businesses, and those businesses lobby hard to keep the postal rates low for that type of mail.
Do you want to address Jim's question? He didn't want to go on the air, Mark, but he wants to know about the layoffs.
Jim had asked how many people were going to be laid off. The number that I saw was right around 140, I believe.
Let's change gears here. Sheriff Babu, two investigations. Dan Scheer, the Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. We've got an attorney general's investigation. Now, the sheriff asked for these investigations, correct?
Right, he did.
Sheriff of Pinal County.
After he said that he wouldn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, he did. Well, first of all, it was the worst-kept secret in law enforcement that this man was gay. Okay. it had been out there before, it just never mattered. But when something like this comes up, now it matters because people are saying, were there threats? And also, I have taken a couple of phone calls and some emails on just what kind of sites was he posting on, and does this show a real lack of discretion on his part, and can we trust him? So the bottom line question is his career over? And I would say that if, you know, there were a vote today, the answer would be yes, because we're trying to look through this haze and figure this thing out, and we don't have all the answers. But could he survive this? You know, potentially, but probably not. Definitely not for Congress.
Yeah, he's trying to spin it that this was being done because he's gay and it was being done by political opponents, and he questioned the timing of it. And so a little bit of innuendo that made this might have something to do with his run for Congress, and it was dirty politics or something. But it really comes down to a matter of his judgment. If the Phoenix New Times story is to be believed and Jose Orozco is to be believed, and certainly the photos lend lots of credence to it, it's obvious that he had some problems with his judgment. He was apparently trolling for dates on some fairly risque gay dating sites and posting pictures of himself, and then also transmitting via text message pictures of himself in various states of undress. And, you know, I don't know that a whole lot of people want their sheriff out doing that. The other question that comes down is the old Watergate-ism, which is, what did he know about Jose Orozco's immigration status, and when did he know it? Orozco said on CNN that he was in the country on a 10-year tourist visa. Well, a 10-year tourist visa doesn't allow him to stay for 10 years. It usually only allows you to stay for a few months, and then you have to go back to your country of origin. And it's not a one-way – it's not a revolving door. You can't keep coming back and forth across the border on the tourist visa. You usually only – you have to get that visa renewed in order to come back in once you've gone home. And you can't work in the country if you're in on that visa. And there's been indications that he was doing work, paid work, for the Babu campaign and others who are allies of Babu. So, you know, this investigation, hopefully it won't be a whitewash. It'll be a real thorough investigation. I think both the sheriff and Mr. Orozco are in serious trouble.
And we don't like to use the word very much, but the word promiscuity has come up, and that's a question for a lot of people. Is this guy promiscuous? Because in a lot of circles, they just don't like that. They don't like that. And so I think there's a lot of questions raised about this guy. And he has, all through his career, been one who has drawn attention to himself. And there had been I've taken phone calls from law enforcement people who've worked very closely with him. And they said, look, it was always about him. And what they were most uncomfortable about was that he would go after grants to fund things that really weren't necessary, but they were sexy-type things that would draw attention and help him get to that next step. So is this a guy who can focus on the job at hand, particularly now with all of this chaos, and actually make a difference in his county? I think there's some real legitimate questions about that out there.
Yeah, I don't know if his career is over, but I'm pretty sure his run for Congress in District 4 is done.
Yes.
I don't think there's any way he gets out of the primary.
Right.
We have six candidates now that will be running in the CD8 special election. We have now a sixth Republican candidate. So what does this boil down to? We had Jesse Kelly on Monday, was here with me in studio, and he's been putting out these polls, or showing the polls, that he has a 25% 25-point lead in this thing. And he admits a lot of it could be name recognition.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that I believe that poll. I'd like to see some others, just so that, because one poll, you never know how they're doing it, the methodology, and you'd like to take a bunch of different polls and look at them and see, you know, if they're all similar or if there's one of them is an outlier or something like that. But I think this race really does come down to, because it's such a short time frame, and you've really got to have a campaign infrastructure already in place. And the only two of those six candidates that have that is Jesse Kelly. He has his leftover infrastructure from his 2010 run, and Frank Antonori, who was, you know, has his campaign structure from running for Senate for District 30.
He's got a lot of signs too that were left over.
Right, absolutely. and so those are the only two that I really see going forward. Although this Colonel McSally got some name recognition for herself with the kick him in the Jimmy comment.
Yeah, she sure did. She was down in Sarita last week on the day that she made that comment on, I believe it was Fox, yeah. And she's going to get a little bit of mileage out of that. But, you know, going back to the Jesse and his poll, I questioned his people at length about, you know, journalists, there are about 10 questions you ask about every single poll. This seemed to be legitimate. The only thing that bothered me a little bit, I think they had polled about 300 people. And so it seemed to be fairly legitimate, but I completely agree. It's name recognition for him right now.
Okay, Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com will both be sticking around, and we will have U.S. Senator John Kyle coming up on our Friday Focus interview as we come up now on 12:30 on the Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. So stick around. We'll be talking with Senator Kyle. If you have a question for him, 790-2040. News. I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. The Western and Arab diplomats meeting in Tunisia to decide what to do about Syria are looking to increase pressure on Bashar Assad for a ceasefire as well as his resignation. There has been another U.S. apology for the burning of some Muslim religious books at a military base in Afghanistan. Senior Pentagon official today told Washington area Muslims that the military is investigating the incident. New York's mayor is defending a secret effort by his city's police department to monitor mosques and Muslim businesses and student groups across several states. Updating Wall Street, the key averages are mixed, with the Dow down about 23 points, the NASDAQ Composite Index is trading 6 points higher, and the S&P 500 Index is up 1 point. More details at srnnews.com. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for fresh and healthy pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is handcrafted using the finest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore's award-winning wood-fired pizzas, certified authentic by the world-renowned Verace Pizza Napolitana Academy, is pizza perfection. Vero Amore, North Swan at Camp Lowell, and in Marana at Dove Mountain, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com and on Facebook.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Ever notice how much time you spend just getting where you want to go? Travel hassles, long drives, expensive parking can all ruin your trip and create a miserable experience. Tucson International Airport has the answer. With close, easy parking, quick check-in, a short walk to your gate, and airport amenities that make traveling stress-free and enjoyable. With nonstop destinations and connections around the world for business or for pleasure, fly TucsonAirport.com. It's the way to go.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, 1234 on KVOI, AM 1030, the Voice Network, over Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. Joining me in studio, Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com and Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. It's time now for our Friday Focus interview presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley. Splendido is a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. Arizona Senator John Kyle is serving his third and final term in the U.S. Senate after previously serving for 8 years in the U.S. House of Representatives. He was elected unanimously by his colleagues in 2008 to serve as Republican whip, the second highest position in Senate Republican leadership. And we welcome now Senator Kyle to the Buckmaster Show. Senator, how are you this afternoon?
Thanks, Bill. Great. I'm just good and glad to be back in Tucson and good to be with you.
Good to be with you as well. Well, folks are very, very upset about this news about the Tucson Postal Processing Center being closed. Is there anything that you and your colleagues, certainly in the Arizona delegation and in Congress generally, can do to stop this, or should we stop it, in your opinion?
Well, I'm not sure is the answer. Congress does not have full authority over the Postal Service. Years ago, the Postal Service essentially became a quasi-private entity not subject to control by Congress. We don't provide its funding, for example. And so we can't tell them what to do. On the other hand, people have a big interest in the post office, and we can certainly pass on their concerns. And I have heard about the issue since I've been in Tucson today, for example. And I'm certainly willing to do that. But it's impossible for me to evaluate the situation. They're going broke, and they've got to find ways to cut back on costs. And I'm not equipped to decide whether or not their particular decisions here make sense or not, given the fact that they're going broke. But people do need to know that. That's the reason that the proposal is what it is.
Here's Dan Scheer, Senator from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Dan?
Good afternoon.
Hi, Dan.
I recently talked to a representative of several cattle ranchers on the border, and they want me to ask you this question, and I know you've heard it before. Why can't we put active duty military on the border?
Well, I'm not sure we can't. It's a question of the will or the desire to do so.
That was not part of your 10-point plan, though, last year, was it?
No, but a part of the McCain-Kyle 10-point plan was to keep guard on the border, and it's the same thing. These are qualified military personnel. They are armed. They have the right to protect themselves, and they have specific duties to complement the work of the Border Patrol. They are very effective, and just having them there, we know from experience, is a great deterrent to people crossing the border illegally. So both Senator McCain and I were very disappointed when the president said he was going to pull them back. And I don't see any plan to reinstitute the program.
Well, back to active duty, though, and for these people down there, there is a difference. And I understand why you say it's the same thing, but there is a difference for them because the active duty wouldn't be going away, in their minds at least. Do you support putting active duty military on the border?
I don't know why you have to do that. There's no distinction between active duty and guard or reserve, none whatsoever. They have a mission, and they have to comply with that mission. It's the definition of the mission that matters, not whether the individual is active duty or not. You can put somebody active duty on the border and pull them out the next day, so I don't understand the argument that they can't be pulled out, whereas the guard can.
They're feeling abandoned.
Well, I understand that, and to a large extent, they have been abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
They've been abandoned by the Department of Homeland Security, which does not have the will to enforce the law. It's not adequately enforcing the law. And I think they are misallocating their resources. So that's another issue altogether, and I totally agree with them on that.
Here's Mark Evans, Senator from TucsonCitizen.com.
Hi, Senator. Thanks for being
Hi,
with us
Mark,
today.
You bet.
Hey, last year when the so-called Congressional Super Committee failed to reach a deal on the deficit reduction, there were a number of poison pills in the plan that created the Super Committee that would have automatic triggers, and one of those was the automatic defense cut spending. And you and Senator McCain and some other senators proposed earlier this month a bill to freeze federal worker pay and federal hiring in order to prevent those cuts. Is there concern, though, that if you start piecemealing the deal that was reached last year, we're going to end right back up in the budgetary brinksmanship that we were in last year that created the supercommittee in the first place?
No, exactly the opposite. It's a way to effectuate it. The Congress said we're going to save $1.2 trillion over the next 10 years. If Congress cannot find a way to do that smartly, then we'll do it the stupid way. We'll just have across-the-board cuts, half of which apply to defense and half of which apply to the non-defense discretionary side of the budget. Everybody, including the Secretary of Defense, said that that would be incredibly destructive to our national security. It would decimate our military. It's unthinkable to do it. He was testifying before the Senate, and Senator Graham from South Carolina said, well, would this be like shooting ourselves in the foot? He said, no, Senator, it'd be like shooting ourselves in the head. So it is the wrong way to achieve the $1.2 trillion. We still need to save $1.2 trillion, but we need to do it in a smarter way. The committee couldn't agree to a 10-year plan to do that. So what Senator McCain and I and others have proposed is, all right, let's do it 1 year at a time, taking one-tenth of the savings that we need to achieve. That's about $109 billion every year. So what we have proposed is that for the first year, we save $109 billion, half of which would go to defense and half non-defense, to avoid the across-the-board cuts, and we would make smarter cuts. And that $109 billion in the first year could be achieved, as you say, by a combination of only hiring two federal employees for every three who voluntarily leave the workplace, so you're not firing anybody. You're just reducing the size of the federal workforce over a long period of time. And secondly, the president had frozen federal pay, and we would just extend that to June of 2014.
Senator, we did have a caller who did not want to go on the air, and it was about the Postal Service. He was saying that Congress does have authority over the Postal Service employees and their benefits. Is that correct? Their retirement plans and the benefits that they get?
To an extent it is, but it is in relieving the Postal Service itself from certain obligations or granting them more flexibility. For example, they don't have the flexibility to terminate Saturday service. And so Congress could pass a law saying, look, if you think you need to save money by terminating service on Saturday, we'll grant you the authority to do that. And the same thing, there are certain agreements relative to the people who are employed by Postal Service that would require federal intervention in order to be modified.
1242 on the Buckmaster Show. U.S. Senator John Kyle is with us. Mark Evans is here from TucsonCitizen.com and Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News. If you would like to join in the conversation, 790-2040. Senator, besides the Postal Service, everybody's talking about higher gas prices here in Tucson and across the country. Some places, as you know, it's starting to push toward $5 a gallon.
It's outrageous.
Yeah.
I mean, the United States has pretty much as much energy in the form of both coal for production of electricity and oil and gas for transportation primarily as any country in the world. But we don't develop our reserves. And most of the reason why is because there are people in politics who believe that they can gain more by opposing this than supporting it. And even to the point of developing resources in our neighbors, Mexico and Canada. Everyone's aware of the Keystone Pipeline. The president doesn't want to have a decision made on that until after the election. Why? Because he has two constituencies, radical environmentalists on the one hand, labor union folks on the other. He's hoping to please them both, or at least not displease one group. He says, we're not going to make a decision yet. The environmentalists cheer. And the labor unions have some hope that, well, maybe later, maybe it will be made, and so then we'll get those jobs that everybody knows will come from the Keystone Pipeline. Meanwhile, who suffers? The American people. That's gasoline production, or oil production, that we could use very quickly. The other argument I've heard from the administration is, well, it would be 10 years before some of these things are online. Right, they said that 10 years ago, even 20 years ago. The reality is that we can relieve the pressure of having to get all of our oil and gas, not all, a big part of our oil and gas from the Middle East, dependent upon people that are not very trustworthy in the current situation. by simply developing our own resources. And you can do it in an environmentally sensible way.
12:44 on the Buckmaster Show. This might be a good time to take our break, and then we'll come back. We've got a couple of calls waiting for the senator. Dan Scheer is here and Mark Evans. Senator, stick around.
You bet.
And we will be back with you after we hear from the fine lineup of Buckmaster Show sponsors, the people that make this program possible. Stay with us. With 275 acres of stunning environment, Innovation Park in Oro Valley is ready for development. Already two of the world's largest pharmaceuticals, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, are settled in Innovation Park. Innovation Park, a great place to do business in Oro Valley, named one of the 10 best towns for families by Family Circle magazine. Find out more at innovationparkaz.com.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
There are times when you save, and there are times when you
save big.
Whoa. Take vehicle loans, for instance. Any time of the year, Pyramid Federal Credit Union can help you save with lower rates. But now, for a limited time, we're helping you
save big.
That means rates as low as 4.5% APR when you buy or refinance a vehicle loan. Plus terms up to 60 months, whether it's new or used. You won't just save. You'll
save big.
That never gets old. Stop by any Pyramid Federal Credit Union or visit us at pyramidfcu.com to learn more. That's 4.5% APR vehicle loans for a limited time. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options.
That's huge.
Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Learn more at pyramidfcu.com. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. It's Friday Focus. U.S. Senator John Kyle is with us on the Buckmaster Show live line. Mark Evans, the administrator of TucsonCitizen.com, is with me. And Dan Scheer of Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, he's the editor there, also with me in studio. And also with us on the Buckmaster Show live line is Clarence. Go ahead, Clarence. You're with U.S. Senator John Kyle.
Yes, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Kyle. Why in the heck aren't the Republicans in both the Senate and the House clamoring to put pressure on this president to do something with regards to intervening on the increased cost of gasoline at the pump? There are a lot of, I don't hear any real strong rhetoric against his inability to do absolutely nothing. Why isn't something, why don't you read or hear about the Senate and the Congress, Republicans doing something to focus on his ineptness?
Thank
That's
you.
My question.
Thank you, Clarence.
Well, first of all, Clarence, I agree with your assessment. There is a five-point Republican plan, one point of which is energy development, which, of course, would go a long way toward solving the problem of the increase in gas prices today. Newt Gingrich began his debate and referred to it a couple times throughout in the debate the other night, and a couple of the other candidates at least mentioned it. Part of the problem is that a lot of people in the media like the president's approach, which is to do nothing because, well, it will take 10 years to get supplies online. Of course, as I said, the answer to that is, how about if we had started 10 years ago? The other fact is that, and it's not well understood, part of the problem here is because our dollar has been devalued so much. If our dollar had the same value that it did 10 years ago or 15 years ago, the gas would cost about what it cost 10 or 15 years ago. The problem is we're having to use a lot more dollars to buy the same amount of gas. Why? Because the dollar is only worth about half of what it was. And that's mainly due to the policies of the Fed in churning out a big money supply, trying to keep interest rates low, which, you know, in one, well, I'll avoid the political comment on that, but the Fed is supposed to be above politics. In this case, I think they're not. And it's hurting our country. It's devaluing the dollar, and it's making things cost more. And gasoline is the first place we've seen that.
Okay. Dan Scheer is up next. I think we're going to switch to some foreign affairs here, Senator.
Yeah,
okay.
Senator, how deeply should we get involved in Syria?
I think we need to be very committed to getting the Assad regime gone and freedom for the people of Syria to decide their own fate. Now, how you do it is very tricky, and that's implied in your question. And so you have to do it smartly, and it is clearly not the same kind of situation that existed in Egypt or even Libya, of course. Syria is a much more difficult country to deal with militarily, and so I think there's a general view that it would be better to try to do that through proxies, through the Arab states who could provide arms, for example, to the people who are rebelling against the Assad regime, through sanctions, which have not been as thoroughly applied as they could. And again, primarily that's because both China and Russia have fought against that. So you can't do it through the United Nations. You have to do it more as a coalition of the willing. But one should not discount the importance of Syria to Iran. Syria is as much a proxy for the mullahs in Iran as Hamas and Hezbollah are. And as a result, they've basically ruined Lebanon and have the control over that government. They've destabilized a good part of the Middle East. They threaten Israel, of course, and they are a place where terrorism gets a lot of support. Moreover, and perhaps most importantly, they're crushing the freedom of the people in the country. And so almost every thinking nation has agreed that Assad has to go and he has to stop killing his people. Once the United States and others can galvanize world opinion around that thought, hopefully we can get more to join in the effort to squeeze him and let others do some of the squeezing that would be unseemly for the U.S. In other words, if a lot more Arab countries are involved in that, it'll be a lot better than if the United States were leading that effort.
What would the United States, or what should our reaction be if Israel does decide to take out some of the nuclear weapons capability, perhaps, in Iran?
I think it all depends. I really hate to speculate about this because things could evolve in so many different ways, Bill, but I'll just make this general observation. I don't think there's any question that that will produce a whiplash effect. I mean, the Iranians would very definitely unloose their proxies like Hezbollah and Hamas and others on Israel, and I think at a minimum the United States would help Israel defend itself. What kind of other support we would provide, I'm just not prepared to say.
Okay, here's Mark Evans now from TucsonCitizen.com. Mm-hmm.
Change gears a little bit, bring it back to domestic policy. The Congress has had, the polls show right now the Congress has an all-time low approval rating of about 9%.
But when by the way, could I just interrupt?
Sure.
John McCain used to say that's pretty much blood relatives and congressional staff,
right.
And he's not sure about the congressional staff anymore.
And some of that, I think, has to do with the gridlock between the Republicans and Democrats in the Congress, and just nothing of any substance seems to be able to get through. You've been there for 26 years now. Do you see there's any way to resolve this and get the Congress working again, or is it supposed to be like this, as George Will says, it's the way Madison designed it?
Well, he designed a system that would resist emotional, quick reaction that sometimes is not a good idea. You want to let things cool off and make sure you've covered all the bases before you take action. And that's why we have the division between the executive and the legislative, and we have the legislative divided into two branches, and the Senate takes a lot longer than the House. However, and I agree with Will that's a good thing. However, the gridlock that we have today goes beyond what I think is healthy. And yes, I have my own ideas as to what has caused it and therefore what the solution is. In the short term, I'll tell you, the president and his campaign people have already decided, and they made, and one of the president's White House personnel made this statement to this effect several months ago, that the last bill that we care about is this payroll tax extension. After that, we're going campaigning. And actually, he started campaigning before that bill passed. So he doesn't have any legislative agenda. He has no desire to have his budget acted on. Republicans will see that his budget is voted on anyway. Last year, Republicans actually brought his budget up, and it failed 97 to nothing. And the Democrats who control the Senate will not put their own budget up. So there's not going to be much legislation done until, everybody says, after the election in what's called a lame duck session. Well, this is pretty pathetic that we can't make any decisions because we don't want to make political judgments until after the election. So between November 5th and December 30th, we're going to try to do all of the big things that we're supposed to be doing this year. That's not the way that Madison designed it. And I think it's a combination of the president just checking out of the legislative process. He wants to go campaigning. And the majority leader in the Senate not wanting his folks to take any bad votes, any tough votes. So essentially, we're just tinkering around the edges waiting for the election. That's wrong.
Dan Shear's got a quick question. Got about 2 minutes to go, Senator.
Yeah, members of the House are perpetually in campaign mode because of the two-year terms. What's the answer to getting them out from under the burden of running constantly for office so that they can focus on the work?
Well, that is, you have just created the question for a seminar that...
And I'm giving you 2 minutes.
Right. Well, and I don't know the answer to that, but it is a good question. And it's not just the House of Representatives. It's the president and, to some extent, senators, too. It used to be that after an election, you had about a year to work together to get stuff done. And then sometime around, late spring of the second year, people would start thinking about politics in the next election, and the campaigning would start, and then things would kind of grind to a halt because it got to be all political. Now, and I think it's primarily because of the news cycle, you've got all the social media, you've got the cable TV, you've got the talk radio and all the rest of it. It's constant. The day after the election is over, they're talking about the next election. And the politicians, therefore, are in a situation where instead of taking a year to get stuff done, they're always having to look over their shoulder at the other side trying to take advantage of us politically. And frankly, a lot of that does happen. So a lot of it's driven by the media. I'm not blaming you, Bill, and you guys, but because you're not in that particular kind of media. No. But as you run your news organizations and think about this, think about how your reporting impacts this. And what the answer might be, and then I'll help you come out here after I retire. We can teach a seminar on it.
I've only got a few seconds left. Are you backing Romney in this race?
I have not taken a position in the primary, at least not yet.
Okay. Too many debates, 20. I think there were 20 debates, right?
One can argue that it's too many. I think information is always good, but I think you could also argue that it has hurt the candidates because they have conducted themselves in a way that I think is destructive rather than constructive. It's their own fault in a way, and they fell into the trap of feeling that they had to go against each other rather than against their main target, which you'd ask them, they'd all agree, is President Obama.
Okay. U.S. Senator John Kyle, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Senator.
Thanks a lot. Senator Kyle with us on The Buckmaster Show. And this portion of The Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oral Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. You can find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. We didn't do the weekend watch today with Matt Russell. We wanted to give a couple more minutes there to our extended interview with Senator Kyle. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates Certified Public Accountants, 2919 East Broadway, and on the web at FlowersRieger.com. Flowers & Rieger is the CPA firm of The Buckmaster Show. If you're looking for a good tax man this time of year, who isn't, right? Michael C. Flowers is the guy. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of our little team, our producer, Rosemary Brandt, I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend. We will be back with you on Monday at 12 noon with our Monday political face-off. So stay with us for that and have a great weekend.
Ten thirty KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 9:30 KAPR Douglas, and 12:40 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.